and welcome to episode 6 of Intentional Living with Kathy and Michael. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Kathy.
Today we're going to talk about personal responsibility, an important element of intentional living. And I find that in the development work that I've done, I kept coming across this idea of you're 100% responsible for everything in your life. And as I encountered that, I was like, whoa, that can't possibly be true.
Yes.
And what does it mean? So I'm still working on unpacking that and what it means and how to implement it in my life.
Yeah.
But have you come across this concept too?
Oh, I certainly have. I embrace it, you know. But I also understand that it's a rather deep concept to embrace. Like, there's layers to it.
Yes.
And hopefully we can explain these layers, right?
Yes.
But I feel, honestly, once you can accept 100% responsibility for your life, the ball's always in your court. The power is always in your sphere of control.
Right. So, to me, one of the things I had to get over was the difference between responsibility and guilt.
Mm-hmm.
I come from a very strict religious formation, and there's strong concepts of sin and guilt and responsibility for others. I'll tell a quick story. When I started first grade just before I turned 6 years old, and on the first day of school, all the kids in my neighborhood got on the bus and we went to school.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us did. Some of us got rides from our parents because our parents wanted to see us go into our classroom. So I got a ride with my parents, but I had instructions on how to get home, which bus to take, and the teacher would help me find it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a girl in my class. I guess her parents brought her to school. So school gets out, I get on the bus, I go home, and it turns out that this little girl has just wandered out the front door of the school and is, like, walking around in this distant neighborhood from where we lived.
Uh-huh.
And so her mother was frantic, of course, and they eventually worked it out. But she didn't know she was getting on the bus instead of trying to walk home. So I learned about this story as it unfolded. And when she was safe and sound at home, my mother said to me, "You should have noticed that she wasn't on the bus."
Yes.
"You get on that bus in the afternoon, and you look around. You make sure everybody from your bus stop is on that bus."
Mm-hmm.
That's your responsibility. And so instantly I felt guilty, you know, that Jenny didn't get on the bus. It was like, I guess I could have, you know, been more helpful. I just didn't notice, and I didn't realize that other people would not figure out getting on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of expanded my idea of personal responsibility. You know, at the age of 5, somehow I was responsible for everybody on the bus. And yeah, I might have handled that differently if I had been the parent. But to me, that was one of the short fuses in my understanding of personal responsibility. That it crosswires to guilt pretty quickly for me.
Sure. So I'm listening to your mother, and I'm trying to have some empathy for your mother as a person in this story, where she's frantic and worried and concerned, you know, like, as if the blame's going to be placed on her, and it seems as if it's just reflexively she's deflecting onto you.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure that your mother had that happen to her growing up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, probably.
So there's a legacy of guilt here, like, that's coming through your family.
Right.
And we haven't really talked about legacies, like, and legacies of thoughts, of habits, of values, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's huge legacies that we all inherit unknowingly, unwittingly.
Right.
And we could talk more about that in another episode. But conversely, so you had a legacy of guilt in your family. I had a legacy of blame in my family. Yeah. You know, and it was easy to... I started to kind of blame other people for how my life was going, especially my father. You know, I blamed him for so much. And when I look back on it now, and I have conversations with him now, and I actually hear what he talks about and gives me an idea of how he sees the world, I could just see, like, so that's a legacy that he developed, or mm-hmm. he inherited, and he probably inherited from his father and growing up, you know, just blaming others.
Today his birthday, by the way?
Today is his birthday.
Happy birthday, Mr. Rosengart.
Yes, serendipitous, right? And it's serendipitous that we talk about personal responsibility because it wasn't... My father was a huge part of me actually understanding, embracing personal responsibility in my life. So as I mentioned, you know, I did the Landmark Forum. During the Landmark Forum, the biggest breakthrough I got was reconciliating my relationship with my father. And I did that by understanding that I had built a racket upon him. We talk about rackets, you know, complaints, you know, a persistent way of being, you know, based off of a narrative, a story where responsibility is outside of yourself. Mm-hmm. So I had this racket against my father where I was blaming him for how my life turned out because he wasn't a good father. Mm-hmm. And then in the Landmark Forum, you know, I saw that it was a racket. I could distinguish it as a racket. And then once I distinguished it as a racket, I then also started to see how it was actually influencing or inhibiting me from being what I could be. Mm-hmm. So part of the forum, the homework was to make amends, you know, and reconcile with my father based on that racket. Mm-hmm. So I did. I called him up, you know, because I was in Los Angeles and he was all the way back in... he's on the East Coast, so I called him up on the phone, and usually when I talk to my father on the phone, there is this rhythm to our conversations, mm-hmm. where it was only a few short exchange before we were at each other's wits ends, you know. So I'm on the phone, and that's partly what I'm expecting, because that's been my experience. But as soon as he gets on the phone, you know, and I tell him that, you know, I'm doing the Landmark Forum and, you know, I had this breakthrough, this realization that I've been blaming you all my life for how my life turned out. There was a complete break in that rhythm mm-hmm. of our usual conversations. Mm-hmm. And it actually, like, I could feel a warmness in his voice as he said, "I'm so glad you said that."
Wow.
He'd been waiting for years for me to say that.
Wow.
To free him of this racket, of this blame I've been placing on him.
Right. So it doesn't change the historical fact that he may have said or done things that were not helpful to you.
Yeah.
But it was your internal process of saying, you know, I'm going to let go of that. I'm not going to continue to put energy into blaming him.
Yeah. Well, so it comes back to the personal responsibility. So what I saw was that I was choosing, unknowingly choosing to hold this grudge day after day after mm-hmm. day against him, which then only limited our relationship or what could be. And what I really wanted all my life was I wanted a father. You know, mm-hmm. I wanted someone that I could talk to, someone that I could, you know, be open with and get advice from, mm-hmm. right? But every time I went to him, I always had this racket in some way, some regards. So it influenced our relationship. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea. And then once I was able to distinguish that that was in our space or in our relationship, that energy, I was able to absolve it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized that I was able to respond differently to him. Mm-hmm. You know, responsibility, the ability to respond. I was able to respond differently to him. And when I was responding to him authentically and I was vulnerable, he then actually had a different response to me. And that conversation led to us having a reconciliation in our relationship, which has never been the same. Our relationship has never been the same. It's, you know, that had really also led us to bond in a different way, mm-hmm. you know. He actually came out to visit me in Los Angeles. You know, I'd been living there for something like 5 years and never once visited me until that phone call. And then he came out and visited me. So I digress. But
so this concept of giving up the racket and letting go of blame is also a process of dropping expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So part of your racket was you'd get on the phone or be involved in a conversation, you would expect him to knock down your ideas or expect you to downgrade your accomplishments. And so going into the conversation with that expectation, you inevitably made it come true.
Exactly. Self-fulfilling prophecy, right?
So I haven't done the Landmark Forum, but I have read a book put out by Landmark Worldwide called Conversations That Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the key concepts that they explain, that basically, well, I guess two ideas. One is we really make up our reality moment to moment by what we say and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is just sort of a physical expression of a thought.
Mm-hmm.
So in every moment, you create reality with your language and your actions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you enter into transactions, conversations with other people, you can create whatever reality you want by what you do, by what you bring to that conversation or interaction.
Yeah.
It's not foreordained, unless you let it be.
Completely.
So, to me, that also goes inward, that your life is really a story you tell about yourself. You
mm-hmm.
tell it to yourself all the time in your head. I'm athletic, I'm not athletic. I'm smart, I'm not smart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good at this, I'm not good at this. So it's just, I have to keep this job because I can't find another one.
Yeah, I can't dance.
I can't dance. So those are all stories you tell yourself, but they're all ways of giving away agency about your life.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'd be a really good dancer, but even if you're not a good dancer, maybe you'd be a really fun dancer. And if you're
how would you ever know?
So if you continue to create the reality with your words and thoughts and actions that you can't do something, then you will never explore your ability to do it.
Exactly.
So this is coming closer to this idea of personal responsibility for me. I feel like this is a kind of a Rubik's Cube puzzle for me. I think I have it lined up, and then there's a square on the other side that isn't moving along.
Yes.
So I've been working this knot for a long time. So it's not guilt. It's not what you think you should have taken responsibility for.
Uh-huh.
It's not blame. It's actually the process of giving up blame.
Uh-huh.
It's the process of giving up expectations that someone is going to do something because they've done it before.
Yeah. There's a lot of forgiving, you know, giving up,
right.
Letting go.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I guess I've never really thought about it, but I guess that's probably where that word comes from, for giving, like in foregoing. That's interesting. So if you create a space where you're free of expectations, you're free of blame, you're aware of, at least in my case, the tendency to list towards guilt, then you can create a clear space where your personal responsibility is accessible to you.
Yeah. Well, this is where the practice of mindfulness really comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and a rough definition, mindfulness is you're just mindful of your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you acknowledge those thoughts that are actually passing through your brain right there.
Yes.
Right? You're aware of where you are and what you're doing.
There's a book that I'll mention in the show notes when I retrieve the name of the author. It's a book called Managing Your Thoughts. And it has another elusive but important concept, which is your thoughts exist distinctly from you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can put a little bit of distance between yourself and the thought, then you can take control over looping thoughts or destructive thoughts, things that you don't get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, but recognizing that a thought is different from your brain and your mind is the foundational step in that process.
Yes. Headspace does a great job at distinguishing that in their basic package. Yes. You know, they have a little illustration that really basically talks about a big blue sky. So your mind is the big blue sky, and that just as clouds come across the big blue sky, you have thoughts that enter your mind. Mm-hmm. But those thoughts will actually keep going away.
Right.
And beyond that is always the big blue sky. So your mind's always there. You just, thoughts come into your mind and leave your mind.
The process of giving up expectations is very difficult for me. I think that I rely a lot on heuristics, you know, shortcuts, that what happened before will probably happen again.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm primed for certain circumstances leading to an argument.
Yeah.
So dropping that expectation, one of the tools that's mentioned in How Emotions Are Made is a reframing.
Mm-hmm.
Recognizing that when you see what have been storm clouds in the past, identifying them as thoughts and then making your mind neutral as to what may happen next.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's a way of labeling triggering behaviors. In the book, How Emotions Are Made, the author talks about a situation around her house. They recycle, and when she puts things in the recycling bin, lots of things that don't actually get recycled end up in there. And she puts them there because she thinks they ought to be recycled.
Mm-hmm.
It ought to be true that this is recycled. And her husband has to sort them all out. And so at first it was very frustrating for him, but then he relabeled the experience. Even though it was very likely to happen next week again, he relabeled the experience as recycling optimism. That she wasn't being recalcitrant or lazy or not listening to him. She was just too optimistic about what could be recycled.
Mm-hmm.
And so by reframing that, he headed off the expectation that he was going to have to, you know, the reality is he was going to have to go through that process probably every week for the rest of his life.
Yes.
But he's reframed it so that the expectation is not triggering.
And that's excellent. You know, it takes energy to be able to reframe, especially around other people.
Yes.
You know, and essentially when I look at reframing, it's you're going to look at that human being with a sense of empathy and really try to understand what they're trying to do.
Right.
Like what needs, basic needs, are they trying to accomplish?
Right.
All right. And I think it's a trouble, especially in our modern world, especially if you live in an urban area or that you're very well connected via phone, text, email, right? Is that there's too many stimulus, there's too many people that are literally bombarding your space.
Mm-hmm.
So having that energy to be empathetic to everyone is really hard to do.
Right. But it's also a way of defending your personal responsibility, your ability to effectuate your personal responsibility.
Well, which is great. So then, if it's hard to be totally empathetic to everyone, we can then maybe give some tools where you could take a step back, right? And maybe just shift your energy of how you're approaching the entire day.
Right.
Because when you walk out the door, you're walking out with a certain energy, a certain bag of expectations, right? And then that's, you're projecting that energy onto other people, into those interactions, into those relationships as you're going.
Right.
And you may not even realize that you're doing this because you're too concerned with getting to work on time or that project you're working on, the deadline. Or maybe you're running a racket. You don't realize you're running a racket with that person at work or someone in your family.
Right. This idea of energy is really interesting and was largely out of my field of view until a few years ago when I started to really notice it. I had one experience that I was telling somebody about. I was in Whole Foods, and there was a woman who was shopping there. And she was engaging with people. She talked to the fishmonger. She talked to the produce person. And I found myself practically following her around the store. You know, like I wanted to see where she was going next and what she was going to say, because she just had this, like, incredible sparkling energy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, only because I was too shy did I not say, hey, can we go have coffee next week? Because, I mean, it was just awesome. And when I was explaining this to someone else, it was like, well, that, you were reading her energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was open and compassionate. You know, she talked respectfully and really listened to the fishmonger.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't treat him like somebody, you know, who, you know, was, she was paying his paycheck. It was really interesting. And when you see something like that in action, and then you realize that you have the power to do that, maybe you're not as chatty as she was, but you have the power to bring that energy to every interaction.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the ability to drop your expectations and see what may be created in that moment, just on the basis of what energy you bring to that situation or conversation.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I also want to put a little side note here. So dropping expectations, right, and changing your behavior is not just, you know, instantly done.
Oh, no.
Right?
No.
It takes practice.
Yeah.
Because that woman that you were watching, she actually cultivated those skills.
Right.
The skill of being able to listen to someone, the skill of being open, right?
Right.
She cultivated that skill of having expectations that those interactions were actually going to be fun.
Right.
You know? And if currently you have cultivated skills where interactions were not fun, right?
Right.
Maybe you could drop those expectations for once and it works, but it doesn't mean that it's a one and done deal forever.
Right. Yes. The thing is that all you can control is your energy. If the other person is having a terrible day and they don't care who knows that,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, you may not find this experiment very rewarding. But if you have repeated interactions with that person, on average, they'll be more positive and more interesting than you know now.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I think part of this is also self-awareness,
mm-hmm.
right? So, for example, so when I grew up, I really watched my mother be a mother, go to work, go back to school, get her bachelor's, go get her master's. She's a valedictorian in her undergrad's class, got her master's. She did this all when I was going through middle school and high school. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always a struggle. So I essentially learned that progress has to look like a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And I tattooed that into my head.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I really wanted to make progress in my own life, I would strap on my boots and I'd be like, well, I'm getting ready for the struggle, and I'd arrange my life and go for the struggle, and it would be a struggle, mm-hmm. you know, 9 times out of 10. So here I am yesterday, you know, and I'm just journaling and I'm like writing this down, right? I'm acknowledging that I have a lot on my plate right now, currently this weekend and this week, and I write my journal, you know, I'm spreading myself too thin. And then all of a sudden I had that realization, well, okay, I'm making progress. Do I want this to be a struggle? And I was like, well, no, I actually want to invent the possibility of ease here.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about possibilities, you know, like I wanted to invite or cultivate the energy of ease. So I wrote in my journal, you know, I'm open to having ease come through, creating the possibility of ease and effectiveness. And as soon as I was done writing that journal, right, I was in the gym with my wife, and my wife's, we're going to go on our date. So my wife is going to go to the locker room. She's just going off. I'm going to the locker room, and I'm expecting that my wife's going to take her time in the locker room, take her shower, and then get dressed. And I'm like thinking, like, it's going to be like 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my little racket I have on my wife.
She's going to...
And I was like, oh, okay. I kind of like sighed, let it out, and then I was like, went back to this idea of ease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, just embrace ease. And I was also thinking, well, if she's going to do that, I could probably do some other things right now, move a lot of things along. And as I'm kind of thinking that and rearranging my mind around other things I need to get done, my wife is already walking out of the locker room dressed. And then I'm like, oh, okay. And now I'm thinking, okay, for our date, I don't know where to go. So I come back to the concept of ease, right? I'm like, no, it's Sunday, we're gonna have ease. Mm-hmm. And I remember that one of my clients recommended a great place for high tea, and my wife loves high tea, and here we are in DC, and she's like, where's that email? I pull up the email. My client had listed the Mandarin Hotel and the address. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is perfect.
Right.
And I just go hit the address in the email, pops up in my phone in the maps, and I'm like, and we're off.
Wow.
And yesterday it was raining in DC, so we're driving. There's no one on the road. It takes us 10 minutes to go from the Equinox Club to the Mandarin Oriental Hotel. Getting there, and now I'm thinking, what are we gonna do about parking? Probably valet parking. And I'm like, okay. Okay, so hopefully it's ease. And as I'm driving up around the circle for the hotel, there's a parking spot in front.
Oh, wow.
I kid you not.
That's remarkable for that area.
Yes. So we park and we walk in. We don't have a reservation, but I say, is it possible for us to have a high tea? They say, one moment, let us check. They come back, they seat us down. They seat us down in you know how they have these two couches,
yeah.
Right? We got the two couches that face each other with the table with this good view.
Wow.
It's like, oh, wow, this is just wonderful.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Now I want to go.
There you go. And I was very proud that it had went that way.
Right.
You know, because if I had been stuck in my old way of believing that progress is going to be a struggle, that probably would have been a struggle. Probably got wet in the rain, you know, spent more money on valet parking, yada, yada, yada.
There's a concept in yoga, the idea of finding ease in the pose. A lot of yoga poses are a struggle,
mm-hmm.
For me anyway, getting into the right shape and doing it with proper form and holding it for a few seconds, at least a few breaths. And so often yoga students really exhibit struggle to get there and to hold it. And one of my teachers identified the concept of ease. In Sanskrit, it's sukha, S-U-K-H-A. So yes, there's a struggle to get into the pose, but if you can shift your mind once you've gotten into it to inhabiting the pose from the inside, you can find the ease in the pose.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes there's an initial struggle followed by ease, but by being mindful of the struggle and the desire to get to ease, you can get there.
Yeah. Well, I also just want to reiterate, I think, so I shared that experience because we're talking about taking on personal responsibility, which is essentially you're going to change thoughts, you're going to change behaviors, right? We're going to let go of expectations. And it doesn't always come easy at first.
Right.
Right.
So I think it's very easy for me to blame someone else. I've worked on that for a long time. I think there was a tendency for that to happen in my family, that see what you made me do.
In
fact, my younger sister, one of the first phrases she learned, which she deployed in my direction all the time, was, see what you made me did. See what you made me did. And that could be anything from spilling milk to, you know, some other more serious event. So I've been listening to myself and trying to identify and edit those places where I might be prone to say, well, I did that because, you know, my husband did something.
Yeah.
And I'm rooting those out little by little, but it's a tough self-audit to find all those places. And they may be specific events, or they may be more pervasive thoughts, like the tattoo idea. Well, I have to keep this job because my spouse would be furious if I didn't have an income. Mm-hmm. Or, well, I'm going to have to make dinner again because it's not a good idea to go out.
Mm-hmm.
We can't go out. And I just might have these embedded ideas that really are not true. And by identifying them at least, then you can get behind what you think is true and ask whether it is true. And from that place, bring it back to what you want to do and what you're able to do.
And that's part of the journey.
Yes.
Right? So you have to cultivate that awareness to even acknowledge that these thoughts are there.
Right.
You know, you have thoughts, you are not your thoughts, right?
Right.
You have emotions, you are not your emotions. So cultivating that awareness is part of the journey to becoming fully responsible for your life.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there's so much that's in our bodies, in our minds, that have been there for a long time that we inherited without even knowing.
One of the exercises suggested in managing your thoughts is look at your sentence structure. Whenever you say, I have to,
mm-hmm.
look at that. Is it I have to, or is it I want to, I need to?
I get to.
I get to. Yeah, so if you play with that language, you can explore whether the things that you think you're obligated to do really align with what you want to do. Or are you taking things that you want to do and somehow turning them into obligations because it's easier not to take responsibility for wanting to do them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, essentially it's a racket.
Right.
You throw off the responsibility and then you're going to show up with a different energy.
Right.
And you're not going to actually really care as much about how you're showing up.
Right.
And that was one of the distinctions on Landmark's team management leadership program, is that, you know, that I get to.
Mm-hmm.
The distinction of I get to. So we'd be careful of hearing I have to.
Yes.
And then we'd recreate it and we'd share it with other people saying, I get to do this.
My friend Simon is a very high-level practitioner of Ki Aikido,
mm-hmm.
which has different aspects. But he was demonstrating one time the martial arts aspect of Ki Aikido. And he had a uniform that he put on. It was a white tunic and then not exactly a skirt, sort of long culottes. It's a Japanese martial art. It's a very beautiful uniform that they wear. And then he was tying the belt, and the knots in the belt were very complicated. And it took him several minutes to put it on, to show us. And I was looking at it, and I said, do you have to put that on every time you practice? And he said, I get to put this on every time I practice. And that was really transformative.
Yeah. It's also a ritual, right?
Yes.
So we talk about rituals.
Yes.
He just went through the ritual of putting it on.
Right.
Which helps to shift the energy.
Yes.
You know, so like when I'm about to work out, I have a little ritual where I listen to this album. It's called Mind Heist. It's got this great, I want to say classical sound to it of building energy.
Hmm.
And I listen to it as my ritual, as I am doing my warm up, my movement prep. And
mm-hmm.
it changes my energy.
Mm-hmm.
It really helps me to shift and go. I mean, another thing I would like to say about, you know, the journey to being 100% responsible for your life, I would recommend the book Focus by Daniel Goleman as a way to start to cultivate what you are focusing on. Because if you can start to pinpoint and start to build rituals, right, by using focus of like, I'm going to focus on really shifting my energy and creating a ritual around my workout, or creating a ritual around what I do to write.
Mm-hmm.
If you could create small rituals, the journey, the path to personal responsibility grows,
mm-hmm.
right? You start going down that road more and more.
Right. Your ritual around writing might be, I make a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to write, and I get to have this cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're unifying of, something that's pleasant, having the cup of tea, with something that you get to do. You may be afraid of success or failure in that process, but if you reinforce that writing practice with rituals that are purely enjoyable, you may find it goes better.
Yeah, exactly.
Are there other books in this space that you think help illuminate the idea of personal responsibility?
Yeah, I do. So I have a couple of books that I wrote down here. So we'll get to extreme ownership in a little bit, because I think that's a deeper level of personal responsibility. But I would look at Simon Sinek's Start With Why. So a book is really, you know, asking you to look at why you want to do something. Because if you really could connect with the why, so we're talking about the journey of personal responsibility, that will be fueled or energized greatly if you know why you're trying to do something, and that why is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little technique out there which is called the five whys. So and we do it at Equinox when we're doing our fitness assessment, right? So someone comes in, I want to lose weight. And you basically are trying to go through five whys, asking them why, get into the layers of behind it, because that reason I want to lose weight is tends to be superficial, and it tends to be the persona, and it's safeguarded, you know, away, safeguards away from something that is actually truly important to them. And if that's the mode of operation, or that's where you're acting from, something that is very superficial, when you're trying to change your behavior and create rituals that last, basically create habits to last, right, you're going to hit roadblocks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to get hard. But if you can connect with your why, right, and when I say connect with your why, if your why doesn't make you cry, that's not your why.
Mm-hmm.
If you can connect with your why, well, it's going to be easy to stand there and take on whatever's being thrown at you when you're trying to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a legacy of habits and thought patterns, emotional patterns, that are trying to steer you in another way.
So if I came in just off the street and I joined and they paired me with you, you'd ask me...
So what are your goals?
Well, I want to lose weight, and I want to stay healthy so that I can keep running.
Okay. Why do you want to lose weight? Why do you want to keep running?
Well, I think losing weight will make me a better runner. I'll have less mass to move, and my cardiovascular fitness will improve if I'm carrying less weight.
Why do you want to be such a good runner? Just curious.
I really love running, and it's the foundation of a lot of the things that I do. I feel as though as long as I can run, I can do other less strenuous activities like gardening and beekeeping and all those things that require you to move, and to be able to lift heavy things from time to time. But I feel as though as long as I can run, if I can maintain a level of fitness that allows me to run, then I'll be healthy enough to do all those other things.
Interesting. Wow, you really want an active life. Why do you want such an active life?
Well, there's just so many interesting things out there to do and to explore. I mean, no matter how long you're on the planet, there's always something new to try. And I want to be able to, you know, climb up and do zip lining for the rest of my life. I want to be able to try new things. I don't want to be in a position to say, no, I really can't do that. I want to be ready for whatever interesting thing comes along.
Hmm. Why interesting things?
Why interesting things? It really brings me joy that I can discover things and be able to experience things like, you know, going diving in a cave in Mexico. Right. If you don't have a basic level of fitness, you really don't have any business putting on a tank and going underground in water. And I want to be the kind of person who, even as I age, nobody's going to say, no, you really shouldn't do that.
So right there, I'd be listening to how you said joy on that last one, mm-hmm. and also that you don't want to have anyone tell you what you can't do.
Right.
And I kind of, for me, I'm touched because I know you and I know that you have claim your joy.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
And to me, I'm like, okay, I see it.
Right.
You've got something going on right there.
So this five whys exercise is, you can do it yourself, but somehow it's more, I find it greater accountability mm-hmm. in doing it with someone who persists in the why.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a little annoying the first time you encounter it. You can feel like you're saying, I just told you why. But it's the process of digging beneath those layers.
Yes. It's not like, you know, a child, like, why,
right.
why? Even though, like, when a child is saying that, like, if you're willing to take it on, like, those
yes.
are, that's a great conversation.
Yes.
Like, why,
I agree.
Why?
I agree.
It's not comfortable, really, to get through those five whys,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you essentially breaking down and being vulnerable.
Right.
Not everyone wants to be vulnerable.
Right. So some of the answers that you might hear in a fitness club, once you get through weight loss, healthy, et cetera, you can see how they might make somebody cry. It might be like, well, you know, I have a new grandchild and I want to be able to play with the grandkid.
Mm-hmm.
And those things that really connect people to why they want to be in a gym working out, and doing things that their body is not accustomed to doing, those are motivational tools that both they and the trainer can use to say, I know this is hard, but this is going to get you where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Remember why you're doing this.
Yeah, so just to be clear, I never take someone into the room during their fitness assessment and try to make them cry.
No, they do that on their own.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But basically, when I do it, I ask for the whys, and I'm just listening for something that has a certain emotional weight to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, like in this, again, I know about claim your joy and how hard you're working on that.
Mm-hmm.
I know how important that is to you. You know, in fact, if we were on the podcast, I'd probably say I could go much deeper into, like, why do you want to do claim your joy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So that's huge. And then when I'm hearing also that you're like, how running is about keeping you active, but then there is the other layer underneath it of also of not being held back.
Right.
Right? That's, I would basically hang my hat on that and just keep that in the back of my head, being like, this is what motivates Kathy right now,
right?
Right? She wants empowerment, right? She wants ability, right?
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I can see that.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm getting to the point where it's a really good thing that I have younger friends, because people my age can't do the things that I want to do.
Yeah, and that's scary.
And I don't want to put myself on the path of resignation.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much fun to be had.
Yeah.
Like trail Ragnars. Those are fun. I think I'm going to do another one in August.
The magical running in the night.
Yes.
Ragnars.
Yes.
So going back to Start With Why, the book, I think that's a great read, right? Because you get a little more aware of why you're trying to do something,
mm-hmm.
right? All too often, people are walking around with those, like, goals, and they're superficial, and don't get underneath it, right,
mm-hmm.
of really knowing. If you know what your why is, why you really want to do something, and that why is making you cry, right, that's huge. Like, so when I look at doing this podcast, right, the why around doing this podcast, right, when I look at how I've been bullied in my life and that feeling of disempowered, right? I remember I would be in fifth grade scared to go to school with blue shoes on because whether or not this bully was in a good mood or a bad mood, I knew my day would be hell. Wow. And I felt like there was nothing I could do about it. And I just felt like I was walking in like they were going to usher me to that shooting gallery where they would shoot me, right?
Wow.
That sensation, like, I don't wish that on anyone.
Right.
Especially if you're an adult and you have things going on, right? Like, this is your one life to live. Look, you shouldn't feel like you're being ushered down to the shooting gallery.
Right.
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 That just nerves me. And I always come back to that memory, mm-hmm. which is really rich for me. So if you know your why, then it's easy to go down this path of personal responsibility, you know? And if you are then also focusing on building habits and rituals along the way, you're creating like little bases,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you could go deeper and deeper. And then the other book I wanted to talk about was Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. He is a former Navy SEAL. And this book about extreme ownership is really about saying, look, you are totally responsible for your life,
mm-hmm.
Wherever you're at, right? And there's always something that you can do about your life. You can always take action on your life, right? So you may not be in the best situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
You may not be in a position that has any advantages. But regardless, you still have ownership over your life, right? And if you take ownership of your life, extreme ownership, where you say, no one else, like nothing is the chance to anyone else, I'm the one that's doing it, you can climb your way out of any hole.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's important to acknowledge. I feel like I have a pretty fortunate life, and I sometimes wonder if someone hearing this podcast who does not have great fortune, maybe has different economic circumstances, different environmental circumstances, would they think this is really just a privileged conversation? But what you have just articulated is a fundamental principle that can be embraced by all humans, which is you're the CEO, the queen, the king of your life,
mm-hmm.
and there is always something you can do.
Always. Yeah. I mean, that's what responsibility is really about. It's the ability to respond.
Right.
So, attached to that, what I think is a good tool to help try to really get to extreme ownership, 100% responsibility, is this saying that everyone's a Buddha, right?
Mm.
So I heard this saying a long time ago, everyone's a Buddha, which basically means that everyone that you meet in your life, especially the ones that are giving you trouble, what they really are is they're a Buddha giving you the lesson that you need to embrace,
mm-hmm.
in order to accomplish what you want to accomplish with your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is this other book, it's like a Christian version of this. It's called The Perfect You by Dr. Carolyn Leaf, who talks about the same thing, saying that there are people out there that are basically people that give you trouble, right? But they're there because they're God's messenger to you.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to steer you in the right way.
Right.
Right? So like, when I look at my history of being bullied, right, and I look at the history of my father, I look at that like, look, no, they were in my life for a purpose.
Right.
Right. They gave me an experience. Like, being bullied gave me an experience, right, of feeling disempowered, feeling, you know, ashamed, feeling small, which then led me on the path of trying to develop more and more skills and read and gather more and more knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that I can walk around this planet feeling empowered, feeling
mm-hmm.
that I am responsible for my life, feeling as if I can always do something that I want. And now I also then created the opportunity to try to share this belief, right, and the knowledge I have with other people.
Right.
Right? So essentially, my bully was a Buddha,
mm-hmm.
right? And same thing with my father. You know, like, I spent so many years thinking that that my life, like, blaming him.
Mm-hmm.
And then that in itself showed me what happens when I'm using blame as my habit.
Mm-hmm.
If blame is what I live my life by, this is what I get.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning I'm going to be disconnected from my own family.
Right.
And if I really want to be connected, right, if I want to share my life, I want to have joy in my life, don't use blame.
Right. Right. I find this kind of exhausting. This is a hard concept for me, and it's really a mental workout to try to untangle it.
So I have another thing to add to it. At this level of taking on personal responsibility is don't be afraid of communication. You know, someone wants to say something to you. If you can accept that their message, if you could accept their communication, right?
Mm-hmm.
And know you're not going to be destroyed by it.
Right.
Well, then you could take on anything.
Right.
Because we walk around life so much, right? Creating habits, creating rituals where we're trying to protect ourselves from certain types of communication. You know, essentially, we don't want to hear that we're worthless, or we don't want to hear that we're not loved, or we're not accepted on some level. Like, these are essentially communications that we're trying to run from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we create personas. You know, we put ourselves out there. Yes, this is my public self. We create identities. This is who I am. I'm a personal trainer. How are you? Right.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, we're scared of receiving a communication that we think on some level is going to destroy us.
Mm.
And it's that little belief is most likely created when we're young, when we did feel really, really small. And either we got a communication or we saw the communication in front of us that was really hurtful. And we experienced this discomfort or pain that was very intense for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it wired our nervous system, our emotions, and our brain to try to avoid that same sensation again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you can just not be afraid of communication, you know, be willing to hear whatever the other person has to say, right? Know it's not going to destroy you. You're one step closer to being fully responsible for how your life goes.
Right.
It's not always easy.
No.
You may have to have a couple of rituals to get you to that place, right?
Right.
Like, I remember a good friend of mine, Jeremy Jones, great Jonesy, great guy. I was having a really bad day, and I was really scared about something that was going on in my life, you know? And he was just hearing me on the phone as I'm complaining. Mm-hmm. Like, complaining but feeling small, and I don't remember what it was, because his simple advice was, look, he basically told me to go prime myself. He said, I just want you to go do 100 burpees, change your energy,
mm-hmm.
and then come back and call up that person.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up doing the 100 burpees, and I don't remember what it was, but that little bit of advice of just changing my energy, priming myself to then take on what I needed to take on, helped immensely.
So my takeaway from what you just said is you don't want to be a person to whom other people are afraid to say things.
Well, that's true, yeah.
And that all you can do in such an exchange is to bring your best energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need to go prime your energy, change it somehow, the oxygenation of 100 burpees would certainly change your energy.
Yes.
Meditation might work.
Yes.
Prayerfulness might work.
Dancing.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
A nap.
Any of those things that will get rid of the expectations you have going into it and just make yourself a person presenting with energy that's willing to receive the communication.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can exert your personal responsibilities to how you manage the way it lands on you.
Mm-hmm.
and your personal responsibility for your response to that communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, power poses, you know?
Yes.
Amy Cuddy.
Yes.
Two great power poses.
Mm-hmm.
That's very beneficial.
Yes.
Yes.
So, it's a lot to take on, this idea of personal responsibility, and I've had to certainly make multiple passes at it. I mean, dozens and dozens of passes at trying to see how it works, try to implement it, and it's an up-and-down process for me. I feel like I make some headway in being able to do it, and then I find myself blaming somebody for something that happened.
But you're human.
So it's a long-haul task, and it's a multi-iteration task.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth it.
Yeah. And hopefully we're giving you some tools to work with. You know, keep taking shots, you know. The only way you're going to become good at basketball is by practicing your shot.
Right.
Right, and playing.
Right.
Get on the court. Do it.
So should we recap a little bit?
Yes, let's recap. Because we talked a lot. We went all over the place, really. So we talked about that. Well, actually, we didn't talk about this. It's not your fault, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So do you want to expand on that?
Yes. So it's related to this idea that we were just talking about of how something lands on you. And it's a distinction. Personal responsibility is an attitude you bring to your life and to your conversations and transactions. If it goes wrong, it doesn't mean that it's your fault.
Uh-huh.
It's a cousin to this idea of guilt and blame. But taking on personal responsibility is an act of courage.
Uh-huh.
If the transaction, the conversation doesn't turn out as you wanted it to, it's not your fault.
There's a message there, though.
Right.
Yeah, it's not your fault. You got the right communication. If you're not afraid of that communication, right, and you could have some empathy for the person who communicated it,
right,
you're going to actually see exactly what Buddha is telling you or what God is telling you.
Right. Right.
And if you can't, right, chances are that you're holding on to a racket right there, you know, a complaint, this belief that that responsibility is over there, oh, it's that person, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, responsibility is your ability to respond, your ability to act,
right?
Your ability to take action.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We talked about lots of different books. We also talked about one way to cultivate this, or to navigate this journey of developing 100% personal responsibility, extreme ownership, right, is to look at your self-care habits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, develop rituals that can act as home bases for you so that you can prime yourself, right, to move forward in certain areas. Mm-hmm. Right, so rituals, habits, huge. Self-care habits, huge. Because,
mm-hmm,
look, if you're not getting enough sleep, right, chances are it's going to be very hard to be empathetic to someone that is giving you a strong communication.
Right. Right. It's going to be difficult to manage the energy that you're bringing to a transaction when all you can think about is, I am exhausted. I don't have anything to give.
Yeah.
So we talked about managing your energy, reducing, dropping expectations.
Yes.
We talked about dropping blame, complaints, and rackets.
You can't drop expectations, rackets, complaints, blame, right, if you're low and if you're not taking care of yourself.
Right.
Because those are quote unquote default ways of thinking that you've already inherited, already ingrained into your brain, your nervous system, your emotions, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're there.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take, as Mel Robbins says, activation energy. It's going to take glucose, right, in your nervous system and your brain to acknowledge and then divert your behavior choices, right, to create a different energy, a different behavior in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna cost you something.
Right.
But it's worth the cost.
It's a lot of work. Personal responsibility. It's a lot of work. But worth it.
Yeah. And ultimately, if you could connect to your why, a why that makes you cry, then doing the work is, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, we had a big breakthrough this week, Michael and I. The first episode of this podcast went live.
Yes.
And after much technical due diligence by me, we were able to figure it out and get it on there. Harder than I expected, so I'm interested in this sort of dual timeline. Michael and I are moving forward in a real world chronological time frame.
Yes.
And we've arrived now at episode 6, but for the listeners, they're experiencing episode
1 for the very first time.
At this time, just went live today. So we'll be supporting that episode, putting others up. Available at about a weekly pace.
Mm-hmm.
That's the intent. And
now we're out there for communication too, right? So we're here to hear what you have to say. We're ready for your communication, right?
Yes.
We got a website, we have Facebook, we have Twitter, we have email.
And because intentional living is such a popular concept, we've opted for a Gmail address that is as follows. It's trulyintentional@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's trulyintentional@gmail.com. And we'll also be putting up very shortly presence on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and maybe Pinterest. So we look forward to engaging with you there.
Yes.
And we'll be back next week with episode 7, of Intentional Living with Kathy and Michael. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Kathy.